RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to an action-packed Wednesday edition on the Dark Delight Podcast with
Rainy, Stormy, Dark, Bluey Val, and
how do I even compete with that nonsense?
It's very blowy outside.
You know, I just, after the Senate Intelligence Committee report was released yesterday, I started remembering what I think is the funniest ever clip from Dark Delight, where we're talking about Kilmenick.
Wait. I think I know what this one is.
And I'm like,
it's where I jumped.
Yeah.
Yes. I forget the back and forth, but I remember what you're talking about.
You're like,
Everything's just so scary.
It was so funny because it reminded me, like, I was talking about it yesterday on the radio show, and it reminded me of when, because I'm like, ooh, a Russian came and met with someone in the evening.
That's it. Do you know there's how many Russians there are out there right now, Tracy, that we don't even know that they're among us?
God, they could all be carriers.
They could all be and that's they're not mail carriers though. That is another thing I was talking. I've been so scared. The thing that's been scaring me lately is how could I ever go on without the post office?
I worry about those mail carriers and their cages. Who knows what happened to my mailbox? It's just sitting out there minding its own business on its post on my corner.
Do you know that when actual mail when men and male women are not delivering the mail, they're actually kept in cages too. Did you know that happens?
No.
Once you are hired by the post office, you have to say goodbye to your family, and you have to live at the post office in the basement and in cages. You have your own cage.
That's what I hear. Actually, I had a couple of whistleblowers come to me with a story just like that.
No, things are bad. Things are bad, Tracy.
So today, in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to play the interview we just did, just now, with Ryan Hartwig, who is the Facebook insider, who came out with all the, you know, content decisions that were being made in a skewed way and did all that undercover video for Project Veritas. Was a good interview. Please don't leave. It's a very good interview. I know most of everybody that listens stays for the hour, which is great. But outside of that, we had day two of the whatever you want to call this monstrosity they're running over on the Democrat side yesterday, where they announced their candidate, Frank. They announced their candidate to Celebration with a virtual, like, screen sort of setup where everybody was cheering from their virtual areas. And, like, I guess Joe Biden was in a library in a basement somewhere. And somebody ran out with, like, those fake confetti poppers that they
pulled. I didn't see day two at all. I watched highlights of day one.
Frank, it was, and Joe Biden's standing there, like, looking around, like, oh, like, it was not as good as the Hillary Clinton balloon over-exaggeration. But
Jerry Lewis must be rolling over in his grave to see all these telethons getting screwed up.
Really bad. And the ratings for it, Frank, are like putrid. Look,
well, I mean, according to some people, 19 million people watched the first day.
They were all conservatives.
I know, that's what I'm saying. And 98% of them are happy that they didn't have to pay for the pleasure.
No, seriously, they're seriously conservatives, because the ratios on these YouTube streams from major news organizations is like 50% down votes, 30% downvotes, 70% downvotes. One Fox News broadcast, they had 99% downvotes on it. And we had a crazy night. Luna won yesterday, her primary, and Laura Loomer won her primary yesterday.
That's exciting.
It is. And, you know, the one thing that, especially in Loomer's district, that we need to watch out for is the voter turnout for Republicans was, like, disgusting. It really
bad.
Was sad. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was bad. And then the Democrat had like 65,000 votes for her primary. And I think Laura won with like 12,000 votes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So she's got to work on that. Texted with her this morning. and said, "Hey, you got to work on the voter turnout in your district."
are the numbers there though, or are we just talking about a population hurdle she can't overcome?
I don't think that there's anything she can't overcome. She has outraised her opponent, who is an establishment, you know, incumbent Democrat.
Oh God, to see some flips like that would be amazing.
To flip that district red, that's Trump's district.
That's a bellwether.
Yeah, it would be great. And I'm sorry, but Luna is beautiful. She's really beautiful.
Yes, she's beaming.
She really is. She in her video last night of her winning, I was just like, what a stunning woman. And she's smart, and she's a veteran, and she's, you know, all the things. So.
Now, Florida 13, is that another similar situation as Laura Loomer, where Anna Paulina Luna over here is looking to flip it, or is she looking to just has she taken over a Republican incumbent?
It's Pinellas County, and that's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I think that
I can check right now if you want.
No, there's got to be a Democrat in office there because they primaried.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Florida 13 incumbent. Let's see here. Ballotopedia. It is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Charlie Crist is the incumbent.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. She's got to win.
Charlie Crist, tenure 2017 to present, term ends 2021, years in position 3. So.
Kick him out. Anna, go get him.
Yeah, go get him.
Wow, Something Wicked came out with a really great commercial for the Biden campaign. Would you like to hear it?
Well, yes.
Introducing the Amazon Biden, the home assistant that refuses to take questions.
Biden, can you tell me when your next press conference is?
Absolutely not.
And unlike the Alexa, the Biden won't share location data.
Biden, where is Hunter?
Come on, let's get real here.
You won't have to worry about your kids plagiarizing schoolwork because the Biden doesn't retain information.
Biden, what year did we kill Osama bin Laden?
I don't remember that ever happening.
It may look like a cheap knockoff that breaks down a lot, but the Biden is doing work you can count on.
A three-letter word, jobs, J-O-B-S.
The Amazon Biden, selling out fast in Ukraine and China.
Biden!
Selling out fast. That's amazing.
In Ukraine and China.
To give you a little bit more on that Florida 13, Charlie Crist won in 2018 with 182,000 votes compared to George Buck's 134,000 votes. So there's a swing of only like 50,000, but there's high turnout on either side. It, you know, 2 years of this kind of abuse that everybody's going through may have been more than enough to give someone with a little bit more appeal than one George Buck, you know, some kind of momentum to get over the goal line there.
The greatest thing is that in her, like, when she was going into her acceptance speech area, nobody was wearing masks and everybody was just hanging out and having a good time. And it was just really nice to see it. And then we had this happen in Shasta County, California at a board meeting. Listen to this.
I wasn't going to speak. I was asked to speak here, you know, Sheriff, good to see you. I'm telling you guys, you know, I'm pretty appalled at what's going on. You know, at first we sat as concerned citizens and we all wanted to figure out how to best navigate our way through this whole COVID thing, you know. And as we realized that it's not quite as dangerous as we thought it'd be, you know, I was absolutely appalled and cowardice, you know. And as you're sitting there with your masks on, I don't blame you for wearing masks because I'd be hiding my face too if I was you for what you're doing. It's absolutely horrendous what you're doing to these people. I'm a business owner, and I'm telling you, our families are starving. You know, you guys can sit here with your jobs. You can sit here and you're going to get paid. You can fall asleep in your chair like that gentleman's doing behind his mask right there, okay? And I'm telling you right now that right now we're being peaceful. And you better be happy that we're good citizens, that we're peaceful citizens. But it's not going to be peaceful much longer, okay? And this isn't a threat. I'm not a criminal. I've never been a criminal. But I'm telling you that good citizens are going to turn into real concerned and revolutionary citizens real soon. And nobody else is going to say that. I'm probably the only person that has the balls to say what I'm saying right now. That we're building, we're organizing, and we'll work with law enforcement or without law enforcement.
But you won't stop us when time comes because our families are starving. And if you don't hear the seriousness of my voice, I hope you open your ears. You absolutely listen to what I'm saying. Because this is a warning for what's coming. It's not going to be peaceful much longer. It's not going to be rah-rah. It's not going to be speeches. It's not going to be gathered outside saying a pledge of allegiance. It's not going to be waving flags. It's going to be real. When you see the things that I've seen, I went to war for this country. I've seen the ugliest, dirtiest part of humanity. I've been in combat, and I never want to go back again. But I'm telling you what, I will to save this country. If it has to be against our own citizens, it will happen. And there's a million people like me, and you won't stop us. Open the county. Let our citizens do what they need to do. Let owners of businesses do what they need to do to feed their families. Take the masks off. Quit masking and muzzling your children. The psychological damage you're doing to them is horrible. I've had 6 friends kill themselves since it's happened. Veterans who lost their jobs. How do you feel about being complicit in perpetuating that? The greatest hoax ever perpetuated on the American people. And you're a part of it while wearing your mask. In Shasta County, we're supposed to be red country up here. Not blue country, we're red country up here.
That's Carlos Picada?
Yes.
Okay, it's so amazing. I'm going to play that on the show again tonight because I want to couple it up with a remembrance of the Battle of Athens.
Ooh. And,
oh, yes. You know all about the Battle of Athens?
Tell us, everybody. Tell us.
Okay, well, this is a story right after World War II, okay, where you have World War II veterans stood up to corrupt local government in Tennessee, and they took over their town. And it's serious stuff. There was election interference going on in a local town.
They locked them all up in the sheriff's office, right?
They only came out once the vets in town started applying and fastening dynamite to the outside of the sheriff's office, and they realized it's an amazing story. I can't wait to read through it all tonight and remember this amazing story because I believe when did it happen? I believe it happened. Did it happen in August? I think it happened in August. I don't know, but this is what we've all been creeping towards. People are very, very, very adamant about remaining polite for as long as possible. It's not going to go on for much longer. It's not.
No, I agree. It's getting to the point where it's about to blow. And people, you know, you're not seeing it every day, but there are these counties and these states that are still not allowing their businesses to open. They're arresting people who are trying to open their businesses. This is not going to fly for very much longer. People, like he said, are starving. They cannot feed their families. They can't feed their families. And they're ready. They're ready. They're ready.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
So there's that. And again, you know, this, as you're talking about the Democrat convention where Michelle Obama basically got up there and told everybody that if you don't agree with me, you're racist. And that's why half the country won't agree with me.
And it's going to get worse. It sounds like a threat to me. I'm just being honest.
It did. It did. And in, you know, this was a pre-recorded Michelle Obama speech that she was too busy to even go back and re-record to add Kamala to. Like, she didn't have current events in her speech.
Well, she didn't say anything. And I don't understand why this was lauded as some sort of a moment in history that needs to be remembered forever. She didn't say anything.
And everybody jumped on there saying how amazing and eloquent and beautiful and lovely.
Well, Chris Wallace said that she flayed and sliced and diced and she really got the president. And everybody said, oh, well, she definitely drew blood because Trump had a meltdown on Twitter. She didn't draw blood. It was embarrassing.
It was embarrassing.
And she didn't say, it sounded like somebody sitting down for story time with 2-year-olds. She's reading a story to 2-year-olds.
It was something else. I'm really interested to see what happens next week at the Republican convention and how they do it. They've got the McCloskeys. Nick Sandman is going to speak. They're not going to do any of those horrible music videos that look like they're cartoons from the 80s. Did you see?
What?
The video?
Which video?
Of the video where they had that musical performance of something's happening.
Oh, yes. The Billy Porter thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I watched a minute of it and I ripped into it last night on the show.
I don't even know. And then you had, I talked about this on the radio show yesterday, Frank, but it's much better with you before we go to this interview. Cardi B, interviewing Vice President Biden, right? Asking him questions about health insurance and taxes the same week that she releases her song called WAP. It's not wide area or wireless access point. Do you ever hear the song?
No. She's a worthless tramp.
Hold on. I'm pausing this. Hold on.
Yeah.
I just played the song. I just played the song for Frank because
she's total trash. I've heard songs like that, but I mean, this, it doesn't get any better or any worse. That's just what it is. This is a trash culture.
It's not even trash. It's so dirty that I get nauseous listening to it, and I'm not a prude.
Well, listen, I'm not a prude either, but I'm just like, okay, this is just a trash can of a person. Like, I would feel weird standing close to her.
Yes, you'd just feel dirty. And then James Woods tweets a video of her yesterday talking about how she's on video. She's saying why it is that the pH balance in your private area is off. And she basically says, like, it's because of your breakfast, and then you have relations with the man, and then the man goes in there, and that change. This is the type of thing that she's talking about. And there was a thread that I did last year about how politicians were like, we need to retweet her, but could we? And now they're all championing this woman like she's some like pop culture icon. She's a dirty, disgusting tramp who, like, literally you could get it's gross. And they have the balls, Frank, to throw guilt by association on us. Like, God forbid you talk to one of those tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists, Frank.
Yeah, God forbid.
Meanwhile,
you're wondering, okay, you're so desperate for relevancy, you're wondering how the hell you can make it feasible for you to actually use some dumpster fire like Cardi B as a way to get votes.
It's really something. And then, you know, they're trashing political party nominees now that support the believe in Q. But meanwhile, you've got this woman who literally admitted to raping and drugging men. And you're championing, you're throwing her around, interviewing your major presidential party candidate. You're irrelevant. You're all irrelevant. You're finished. All of you. You're done. You're done. This is it. This is the bot. You cannot scrape lower than this. You can't.
No. Especially the full picture of what the party's about, the communism, the censorship, the taxation, the theft, the intimidation in the streets, the violence, the abortion, just the complete cultural decay. The only thing left is complete 1917. That's it.
Yeah.
The only thing they're not doing is putting people up against the wall yet.
So that's that. Listen, we're going to move into this interview right now. It's a really fantastic interview. I hope you guys enjoy the second half of the show. And we'll be back on Friday with some more amazing stuff. I don't even want to use the word juicy right now because it would just ruin the rest of my day.
Make you want to throw up.
Yeah. Here's Ryan, guys. Enjoy the interview. We're really excited to be joined by Ryan Hartwig, who's the Facebook insider that went to Project Veritas in that huge expose they just recently did. Ryan, thanks for being with us today.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here, Tracy. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. So I've been excited to talk to you because I wrote, Uncover DC wrote a bunch of pieces about your story early on when it was first dropping. And, you know, your information, it was pretty stunning, especially that one photo that you had that they were allowing up of President Trump being basically, what was it, decapitated in a way?
Yeah, essentially decapitated. I mean, his throat being slit, very, very graphic. And, you know, they allow that because it's real-world art, essentially.
Yeah. And you sent me a whole bunch of screenshots to look at for today. And one of them really, the ones about abortion are what really got me.
Yeah.
How did they do? So let's start from the beginning, actually. How long were you working at Facebook before you said, okay, enough of this nonsense?
Yeah. So I started there in March of 2018 and I got hired as a bilingual content moderator. So I initially, for most of the time there, I was reviewing content in Latin America. But I had access during the entire period. I had access to the posts and guidance for North America and the U.S. I started in March of 2018. April of 2018, a month after I started, is when Zuckerberg testified in Congress the first time that, and he said that Facebook doesn't censor political speech. And so obviously I witnessed the contrary for the next 2 years. At about the year mark, around May of 2019, is when I started noticing some things. So I kind of wrote down some notes. Okay, these are some examples of I've noticed of bias. And I wrote a letter to Congress and a couple of senators, and I didn't hear back.
Of course.
And so that's when I reached out to a couple of news organizations, and I ended up, you know, contacting Project Veritas.
So quick question for you. Is there a difference between what is enforced in Latin America and down there and what is enforced here?
I mean, most of the time, like, the policy is applied equally, like, on a global level. Like the changes they make in the policy are global. So there are some differences for the market. There are market differences for certain words, for slang. Overall, the policy is the same, but they do spell out, like, exceptions and differences for different countries. Yeah.
So you're sitting there with your team. It looks like a very crowded space that you guys are all in. How big is the team that you're on typically?
Yeah, the team I'm on, there's a team leader. There's a team leader, and then there's probably like 10 to 12 people on each team. So when I first started on the Latin America side, I was like one of two like white guys. on the Latin America side, but the overall Spanish side was a lot smaller than the North American side. So the Spanish side had a total, and we were working like 24/7 shifts. Like there's a night shift, a swing shift, a morning shift, about 300 people on the Spanish side. North America, I think, got up to about 1,000 people total. Mm. So pretty large, but yeah, smaller teams with your team leader of about, you know, 10 to 15 people.
And does Facebook have any employees that are not contractors doing this work, or is it all contractors?
They also have full-time content moderators at Facebook headquarters, as far as I know, that work directly for them. But they started doing the contract work, and they brought a bunch of jobs to the U.S. starting in 2017. So that's when the contract with Cognizant began. I worked for Cognizant. So after 2016, they're like, okay, they brought all these jobs and hired more U.S.-based content moderators. Because before then, U.S. content was handled by people overseas.
Interesting.
So yeah. They basically told us, and this is what they told us. They said, yeah, Facebook brought a bunch of jobs to the U.S. because they want to prevent, you know, Russian interference in elections. Oh, and geez. They saw.
So you were conservative, obviously, right?
Yeah. I've been conservative my entire life.
And is there any way that they, you know, during the interview process, do they care, or are they just hiring basically anyone with the skill set they need?
Yeah, at that point, it was anyone with the skill set. I don't really think there was a deep dive into people's ideology. But what's fascinating is in July of that, after I was hired in July of 2018, and I have screenshots of that email as well. They actually had us, Facebook, as a condition of continuing to work there, they had us link our personal Facebook account at work. And that's just a little bit sketchy. And even people who weren't worried about politics were like, I don't even have a Facebook account. I'll have to create a new one. So you had to go to work and literally log in on the work computer with your personal Facebook. So they said the reason for that was so that you wouldn't accidentally action your friend's content.
Oh,
But you never know what they do with that data, like, honestly.
Yeah, not only that, they're probably monitoring to see, you know, what you say, what you do. That's pretty crazy.
It's like working with an anvil hanging over your head.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there now. You said April was the month that you stood. Like how long before you realized that you were surrounded by people that didn't agree with you and would do anything to really keep people like you quiet? Or were they not that brazen in the beginning? Like, how did that come to pass?
Yeah, they weren't that brazen in the beginning. I mean, I do remember my first month of training. My trainer, I later found out she'd worked on like political campaigns like Gabriel Giffords. But she, in the training to everybody, she was like, yeah, President Obama is my Patronus charm, whatever that means.
So she's goodness. Okay, so here you are in a room full of vultures having to work every day. And are you overhearing people making content decisions based on, you know, Republican or conservative leaning ideology or showing a double standard? Like, when do you finally get pissed off enough to say, I'm going to do something about this?
Yeah, I mean, some of it happened that first summer, like summer of 2018. Now, on the Spanish side, like, I got along well with people, and in the politics were a little bit different there, obviously. We did monitor the Mexican presidential election in 2018. Not until like a year and a half later, like in July of 2019, is when I switched over to the North American side because they were short on people. And that's when I saw more things of people, like, honestly enjoying. The one guy in the video, Israel Amparan, he literally was talking about how much he enjoys deleting Trump posts. On the Spanish side, even in the Spanish side, summer of 2018, they did this policy rollout, and the policy manager Sean Browder came around. And normally Hispanics are fairly conservative with their beliefs, and most of the people were younger, like mid-20s Hispanics here in the Phoenix area. But part of that policy change is they said, hey, June of 2018 is Pride Month. Make sure to watch out for any hate speech towards LGBT. And then they also included a little detail that it's okay to attack straight white males as filth if they don't support LGBT. And when he presented that, he left it out because he was presenting to like the Hispanic workers. And he put it in the PowerPoint afterwards when he sent it to us. So I think the manager was trying to be a little bit sly about what he told to the more conservative workers.
Interesting. Interesting. And did you try to rectify this within the team or within the structure you had available or bring it to anyone's attention? Or did you realize that was, stupid to do because nobody would care?
Yeah, there wasn't much avenue for recourse. I mean, the whole attitude there was, you know, Facebook's a very important client. They're the client. We do whatever they want. When there were questions about the policy, we had debates, just in general, academic debates about the policy because it's very nuanced. It's very like legalese. And so we would raise things up to the client and we would give them feedback. And sometimes Facebook would change their policy based on our feedback. Just for example, if we saw a lot of carding or different keywords for credit card fraud, we would let the client know. As far as a recourse, yeah, there wasn't really a recourse because if I disagreed with the policy, literally my manager would say, well, that's what the client said. That's the guidance the client says, and just leave it at that. So, and we were supposed to action with our head, not our heart. We were supposed to like, just, I don't know, be like robots, basically. Think with your head, not your heart.
Yeah. And so news organizations you brought this to with these, you had photographic evidence. You were obviously who you said you were. They just weren't interested in the story. Were they conservative friendly?
Well, I actually didn't reach out to that many news organizations. To be clear, I reached out to Breitbart News, to Alan Bokhari initially. And he essentially referred me to Project Veritas. So there weren't too many news organizations I reached out to. But on that note, it's fascinating because in February of 2019, someone else actually came forward and violated their NDA, complaining about abuses at work, like the trauma, emotional trauma at work. So we had a journalist on site in February of 2019. And from theverge.com, it was Casey Newton. And so he documented, talked about how, you know, there's a lot of emotional trauma from the things
I remember that.
Yeah. So those are actually photos of, I mean, I know the people in those photos. You can see the backs of their heads. That's my office.
Yeah. So you literally, so what are these people so traumatized about in your office? What was that story about? I forget. Like, what was their angle on this whole thing? And did they last or did they get fired?
Yeah. So I think that person left, and I didn't know that person personally, but when I went to the North American side, I asked people and they knew who it was. So essentially this content moderator was receiving threats at work because he was part of the quality assurance team. And he was, you know, he wasn't giving people's points back. People were messing up. Obviously, he was doing his job. And he was getting threatened outside of work, wow. like in the parking lot. So in the article, it says that he started bringing a gun to work, like concealed carry. So that was kind of his angle, that Cognizant and Facebook's a shitty company. They don't take care of their employees. But I honestly, like, didn't really agree with the article that much. They did improve the counseling while we were there. We literally had counselors on site 24/7. We had a psychiatrist who was managing the whole program, who I had many conversations with. And so they interviewed the psychiatrist, Dr. Adam. They interviewed him after the fact, like the journalist did at the very end. And they put like a little snippet. So it's like they already wrote the article like trashing Cognizant, but they invested a lot of resources for our wellness. They had like fun activities, that free snacks at work, free food. So, I mean, like, as far as cushy jobs go, like, it was pretty cushy. They were very upfront at the very beginning in the interview. Before you even knew it was Facebook, they showed you images of, like, graphic, like, anime porn and, like, nudity and beheadings. They're like, hey, this is what you're going to be seeing on a daily basis. So I feel like the article did, I guess, help. I think we were underpaid. We were paid, like, $15 an hour.
Mm.
But as far as it's not like Cognizant didn't give a care. I think they did worked really hard to help make sure the employees were doing okay emotionally.
Well, that's,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I remember around this time, I don't know, Ryan, if you were already there at this time, but, obviously it was right after the election had concluded in 2016. So we're into 17 and 18 mm-hmm. and if Facebook was going through these changes and there's a lot of media that was reporting on how Facebook was struggling with having their crews sifting through propaganda and fake news, and the greatest risk that they said was not only just emotional trauma, that the more people were exposed to what they deemed to be fake news, the more they were actually starting to think that there might be some truth to it, which of course is really interesting on our side of things, because whatever the hell they label fake news probably has some truth to it. And yeah. So I thought that was a really a nice little micro observation there. Did you see along the way your time any people around you that you were working with that might have been on the other side of the political spectrum that started getting red-pilled, as they say, as you moved along and they were seeing things that they would normally not seek out themselves?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The article did note on that, touch on that as well. I think they gave the example of someone who believed in the flat earth conspiracy theory. Which, I mean, as far as conspiracy theories goes, a little more extreme. But let's see here.
We got you. Ha ha ha.
Let's see. So what, the two coworkers in the video that were talking on camera, like conservative ones, the veterans, they were already conservative. I'm trying to think of some coworkers who were more liberal that kind of went.
Did you guys get along? Did you talk about politics at work? Like how were your relationships with these other people? Did you like secretly despise them? Because I would have.
Yeah.
Like when I transferred over to the North American side, so in July of 2019, I already knew a lot of these people from North American side. Like I was very friendly at work. I was, you know, I'm pretty outgoing. And so like a lot of these coworkers, I got along with them pretty well, honestly. Like in the video, you know, they talk about how, you know, that people saw me as a racist because I was conservative or a Trump supporter, but I didn't really hear that. Like they weren't super brazen about it. it's kind of like one of those things where they just talk about it amongst themselves. But overall, like, I go along pretty well with my coworkers, even on the North American side. You got to understand, and this kind of goes into that whole report to HR when I was sharing a link about an Islam protest. But like, you got to understand, we're talking about like crazy stuff at work anyways. So you can imagine we have very open-ended conversations. Like, we literally had a picture of like Melania Trump naked, crotch on crotch next to another female woman. And we had to decide from the policy perspective whether that violates the policy. And there's even parts of the policy that talk about like, hey, what is an erection? Is it curved? Is it straight? I mean,
really?
When you broach those subjects, you tend to form a pretty close bond with your coworkers.
That's crazy. You know what? you don't think about it like that. What's some of the, like, I want to get into, you know, your decision to come forward and what personal risk you took and all of that, because it's super important. But like, what's the craziest thing you ever saw?
Probably like, so on the Spanish side, the cartels were pretty bad, the cartel violence. So,
oh geez. Yeah.
There was probably the craziest one is where, the cartel had someone, they just like torture people just to like maintain control over people. There was one that showed, there was beheadings, which were pretty gruesome, and you could hear like the screaming and the yelling, and it was like legit videos. And there was one where a guy had his genital area like chopped off, and they had like a dog like licking it.
Ew.
The counselors like kind of taught us how to like remove yourself from it, like distance yourself, like don't try to empathize with the person in the video, just kind of like visualize yourself watching yourself in a movie theater watching what's on the screen.
That's crazy.
So some of it's pretty disturbing. One of my coworkers, he had to come across some child porn. I didn't come across child porn that often. But he had kids, and like it really, really bothered him for a couple days. So I was always really aware of that, and I always, you know, reached out to the counselor and let them know, hey, my coworker's having a hard time. And you had wellness time each week as well. You had like 50 minutes a week extra time in addition to breaks where you could just take a break.
You know, this is a part of this job I don't think many people think about. So in this is important. Yeah. Like in the grand scheme of things, Ryan, like, removing political posts would, in my opinion, be like probably near the bottom of my list of priorities when you're dealing with murder and, you know, child pornography. Like, was there policy and procedure in place for you to escalate this stuff to authorities?
Yeah, there was. If it was child porn, it was escalated to a Facebook team that dealt with the authorities. There's a lot of federal laws that protects, you know, that talk about that. So if we saw it, we couldn't like share it share the screen with someone else. Cause technically
you're
sharing
someone else then.
Looks at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. And so, yeah, you're dealing with this all day, and then you have a gaggle of people that are like, aha, Trump stinks. Like, really? I mean, that's what you're, holy moly. So you decide to come, was it weird? Did you wear a cat? Like, was it weird for you to wear a camera and go undercover like that? Did you get nervous?
Yeah, I did get really nervous. The first time I filmed, I think it was like June of 2019. And then I didn't film for a while. And then, but the last couple of months, like from December on out till the project ended in February of this year, I was filming pretty regularly, almost daily. But dude, like at the beginning, you're so paranoid. Like literally, you're constantly thinking, oh my gosh, they know.
Yeah.
So, but after a while, you get kind of used to it, and you get to the point where you almost forget you're wearing a camera. The nerves are there. And then I would plan like interactions with people. So like Sean Browder, like I had a pretty good rapport with most people, and like with Sean Browder as well, like I would talk to him a lot. So I'd plan these interactions where I'm going to go talk to him about this or ask him this question. And, it was very nerve-wracking. It caused some tension in my marriage. My wife claims that she knew that I was already recording. So the first time I recorded, I didn't tell her. And she, then now after the fact, she claims that she knew all along, of course, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what most women do, yes.
I always knew.
Yeah. It caused some stress because, like, it was a good job. It had good benefits, good health insurance. So she didn't want to be, like, stuck without a job. And like I've had quite a few jobs in my life, like, so she's kind of like stressed about that. So yeah, definitely not fun in some regards. And then the risk of going public, okay, you're going to get fired or you're going to get sued. So having Project Veritas backing me legally was a relief.
Yeah, that you don't have to worry about it. They're a great organization. You know, yeah. when this kind of grew, did you have anything to do with kind of recruiting the other folks, especially on the H-1B visa issue, H-1B visa issue? Because they were able to uncover a bunch of stuff about illegality potentially at Facebook with that program. Did you help introduce other folks to James O'Keefe and Project Veritas?
I didn't. And I didn't even know about the other guy from Florida until literally the day of when we filmed like after the whole thing ended. I mentioned that a couple of times. I'm like, hey, do you guys want to, there's some other coworkers who are kind of conservative, but their approach is they'd rather have people reach out to them.
Yeah.
It's just safer that way.
Yep.
But yeah, it's nice to see that other people came forward and hopefully there's more engineers. And it's crazy. I mentioned this yesterday in an interview. I was like a low level employee, like content moderator, entry level. And I found a lot of stuff. Imagine if you're an engineer, geez, there must be a treasure trove of stuff for engineers.
And what stops somebody like from personal, like, you know, what kind of policies are in place? Because these people were really hateful of anyone like you. I mean, hateful.
Yeah.
And brazen about it. What stops them from taking action in other ways? Like, are there background checks when you go to work?
Yeah, they do background checks. Are you talking about like retaliation?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the one I'm worried about, that guy Israel Amparan and then Cassie Simo. So yeah, they do background checks. So, I mean, nobody that was working there was like a felon or anything, as far as I know. There were a couple guys who bothered me. There's a guy named Dakota. I won't say his last name, but he was like, so the coworker whose face was blurred, the younger one who was talking about things, she was like harassed by this coworker named Dakota, like sexually harassed constantly, and HR didn't do anything about it. And so like his behavior is kind of concerning, but like Israel Amper, and I filmed him a lot. Like he would talk about how, you know, Trump's supporters are effing rednecks. And he told me he had he's a little bit of a weird history. I'm a little bit worried about him. And Cassie Simo received death threats. She's the one who said that she would accept the $80 million bounty from Iran to kill Trump.
Mm.
So she got death threats because of that. So the main pushback I got from my coworkers after the video release was, they were like, hey, you know that Cassie's getting death threats, right? Like, why did you do this? Like, you're a horrible person.
Wow.
and so...
you're horrible.
Yeah. You're a horrible
person.
Yeah,
I'm horrible. I'm a horrible person. I filmed you talking about how you wanted to kill Trump. Yeah, how horrible of you. Yeah.
You know, this is what happens when people don't realize who's around them.
Yeah, I mean, and it really should be a fishbowl. It really should be, I mean, the American public should know who's deleting their stuff. And this is basic freedom of speech. And one of my coworkers, I'm surprised it didn't get in the video release. There was a lot of that didn't get in that 20-minute video. But one of my coworkers was like, yeah, on Facebook, you don't have First Amendment rights. You have Facebook freedom of speech rights. I'm like, oh, well, that's how it works. Okay, thank you. Thanks for explaining that to me.
Is there anything official from them about speech in general? Like what guidelines there? Like I don't even know how to ask this question. Do they have their own code for freedom of speech? Like legitimately, like that they give to people?
I mean, yeah, it's essentially that's what their policies are. Like their hate speech policy. I'll make sure to share that screenshot with you if I haven't already. But basically, like they don't allow any attacks against, yeah, they it's very, very nuanced, but they basically interpret what's allowed and what's not. As far as freedom of speech goes. So if political exclusion is a great example, and this is something I've touched on, and sorry, I had a hiccup there.
No, it's fine.
Okay. Great example. So the Alabama abortion law, a couple of years back, might've been 1 or 2 years ago, they wanted to pass like a law banning abortion, like late term abortions. And there's a bunch of outcry from celebrities, from Hollywood. So like Alyssa Milano was pushing this trend where they said, you know, men shouldn't make laws about women's bodies. So that phrase actually violates Facebook's own hate speech policy for exclusion, because you're excluding men from the political process. So Facebook gave us a post and said, hey, we know that what Alyssa Milano or what these celebs are saying violates our policy. We're making an exception to allow this because it's newsworthy, according to Facebook.
So if something's newsworthy, according to Facebook, they can break every one of their policies if it's determined by them that, yeah, that's great. And it's crazy that I don't even, what access did they give you to internal stuff? Like, what did you get to see from a higher level inside Facebook outside of their policy? Like, did you interact with anyone from Facebook or only your team lead there at Cognizant?
Yeah, so I applied a couple of times for a promotion with the policy team, and I had a bachelor's degree. I have a bachelor's degree, and not everybody did there, so I didn't get the promotion. If I was on the policy team, I would have been interacting more with Facebook. There are some things as far as that goes.
Because all Facebook did was basically blame you guys.
Yeah, so. The access to that, I had in documents. We had access to quite a few documents. So I had access to the training decks globally. So I would look at training decks for like Taiwan. Like it was just there in like the documents. Like it's not, I'm sure not a lot of people like accessed it, but I was just kind of exploring around. And so I also saw some stuff about anti-vaccine. They had a whole policy dedicated to like anti-vaccine. We didn't enforce it. Maybe another group enforced it. But they didn't have an entire policy dedicated to that. They had, so training election decks for Canada, Europe, different parts of countries in Europe, Mexico, obviously. So whenever something, a big election's happening, like they let us, and some of it's like pretty basic stuff. Like, oh, hey, these are the candidates. Nothing too crazy. But in Canada, they were like, hey, this is candidates Jagmeet Singh. He's a Sikh. He may be attacked for hate speech. But it's never like, oh, hey, this person's a Christian. They might get attacked because they're Christian. In fact, like we would allow memes, especially in Mexico, that were like showing Jesus Christ on the cross, like sexually. And then, but you couldn't, of course, portray Muhammad with a goat in a sexual pose.
Wow.
So there's a big double standard.
You can't even portray him, period. You can't portray him eating a slice of cake. You can't do anything.
Yeah, I'm so not sure. It's something that it feels like we're caving to like terrorism in a way. And you know, of course, I don't want to portray Muhammad in that way. But as far as freedom of speech goes, why shouldn't I? If it's they say that,
why the double standard?
Yeah, why the double standard?
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's and I give you a lot of credit because. You call yourself low level, but look at the effect that you've had. So what has happened to you since this video has dropped?
Yeah, so the project ended with Cognizant. The project ended in February of this year. So I found another job in March at a call center full time. So I worked there from March until the video release. And then I was still working that weekend. Like I called in the day the video came out, I called in sick to my job. And then that Monday, I'm just like, you know what? Like they wanted me to work overtime, 46 hours a week. I resigned because I couldn't handle everything going on.
Yeah.
So I've been unemployed since then. I don't really believe in collecting unemployment. I'm not that type of person. I've literally had like 30 plus jobs like through college and everything. So I'm, yeah. So I had set up the GoFundMe. That's helped me. But yeah, definitely. The GoFundMe is just gofundme.com/Facebook Insider, and everything helps because I'm doing interviews literally full time. So since then, a lot has happened. I communicated with Congressman Matt Gaetz's office and I gave him more documents. Can I say shit ton of documents? Yeah.
Yes, you can. You can say shit.
I say it a lot.
We say a lot of bad words on this podcast.
So, yeah, I gave him a bunch of documents, and then I believe that part of the reason why he was able to submit the criminal referral was because of those documents, and he did so in late July. So that was that Monday in late July, and so he sent the criminal referral to the DOJ for Zuckerberg potentially lying to Congress. Mm-hmm. So that was huge. That kind of like gives me a huge sense of satisfaction because I know that my efforts were not in vain.
Yeah, no. Have you had any issues at home, or like, has anyone followed you or anything? I know Zach from Google had a lot of problems, and we've interviewed him a couple times. What about you?
Yeah, I haven't. I think because if the video release had happened right, while I was still working there, it might have been a little bit different. Besides just the trash talk from my coworkers, no direct threats or death threats.
Oh, thank God.
As of yet. But I have had some weird messages on Twitter and attacks. And you know you're going more mainstream when you're getting attacks like that, so that's like a good sign. But yeah, I'm definitely taking care of my safety, my family's safety. Very aware of that. It's so easy to get doxxed nowadays. And if you Google my name, like Arizona, you can probably find like my parents' address, super easy.
Yeah.
But so there's only so much you can do to really remain anonymous.
Yeah, no, you're preaching to the choir there. What do you have plans next? Are you just going to, you're obviously out doing interviews about what you found and trying to raise awareness about it. I've been affected by this policy. I think everybody has been affected by this policy sort of directive that they've got going on. I don't have any hope that it will ever change. So, I'm on CloudHub. I use other social networks and platforms, and, Facebook's the necessary evil right now, but I don't think it will be for long. What kind of plans do you have, if any, moving forward on what you'll do in this sort of a space? Do you have any idea?
Yeah. So I actually kind of want to start a nonprofit, just kind of like a foundation to get for freedom of speech or against censorship. I've looked at that. I've kind of blown up in Brazil, like coincidentally. So late July, that same week of the hearing, congressional hearing, we wrote a little joint letter to Congress, and I mentioned Brazil in my joint letter. And Brazil is getting censored very, very harshly. Their Supreme Court literally issued court orders like banning like 10 conservatives globally from Twitter and Facebook.
Wow.
So I gained like 15,000 followers on Twitter in Brazil over a period of a week.
Wow.
Yeah. So I might go to Brazil in the next month or so and visit a congresswoman down there. But yeah, I think creating a nonprofit would be great. I'm actually in talks with Robert Epstein, the Google researcher.
Nice.
And he might be helping to kind of guide me on that process to form a nonprofit.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Speaking of Robert Epstein, he's really been vocal about his dire predictions and the impact that Google has had on American elections just in general. I mean, obviously they have an impact on so much more in very, very undetectable ways. But as far as his dire analysis of what was done in 2016 and what is certainly going to be done in 2020. Do you see any kind of light at the end of the tunnel, anything that's being done to counteract the power that the social media giants have on the American mind and the American psyche even in the most subconscious of ways, because that is the real danger. He said that people were putting forward that 75% of people don't know that they're being manipulated by search engine tweaks and stuff like that. So what's your outlook just in general? Because I know bringing up Dr. Epstein, he has a mix of what he thinks is going on.
Yeah, kind of like Tracy, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I also realize like at this point it might be too late to stop this train that is the monopoly, Facebook, Google. It's interesting because I reached out to this person on LinkedIn. I didn't know too much about them, and they said they were like an angel investor. And I emailed him earlier this week, and I mentioned Project Veritas, and he replied back. He just copy pasted like Wikipedia. He's like, this Project Veritas, and it had like all the lies about Project Veritas in the Wikipedia, and so it's kind of funny because it's so easy for people to get influenced. So there are some good steps that Congress has taken. Let's see what happens with this criminal referral. If you find Facebook, it's no big deal. I mean, recently they got fined like $5 billion, which is chump change for them. And then Jim Sensenbrenner in the congressional hearing on antitrust was like, oh, we shouldn't punish companies for being successful. Well, that's a kind of weird definition of being successful. And so Also, Representative Paul Gosar from Arizona.
Yeah.
I need to. I met him a while ago. I need to meet with him again. He introduced some good legislation that would kind of change the wording in Section 230.
Yep.
So I think we're making some good progress. We need to keep pushing. But, you know, how many politicians does Facebook and Google have in their pocket? I'm sure they have a ton.
Yeah. No, for sure. Well, Ryan, where can people find you and what, you know, where would you like them to go to keep up with what you're doing and stuff like that?
Yeah. So my blog is ryanhartwig.org. And I just redesigned it last night. So that has all my links, all my videos. I've done about 50 interviews in the last month and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So I've stayed busy. But yeah, and then I have my GoFundMe, GoFundMe.com/Facebook Insider. That always helps. And yeah, RyanHoward.org is probably the best place just to kind of see what's going on.
You guys need to have like a big, huge convention of all of you amazing, brave whistleblowers that have come forward with this stuff and like just party for a couple of days.
Yeah, that would be fun. I've been in touch with Zach Voorhees. I don't know if he's the partying type, but he's been a great friend and support. But yeah, we should.
We'll get Zach to party. We'll get Zach to party. No worries. So I'm sure I'll bump into you at some sort of a convention that I'm at or something. Maybe Amp Fest in October down in Doral in Miami. I don't know, but
I will go to Amp Fest.
Oh, fantastic!
That's
great. So I will meet you there. I'm their correspondent again this year, so I'll be doing all that stuff, and it'll be awesome. Great. It'll be great to interview you in person. And
yeah,
thanks for everything. This is fantastic you to come on with us.
It was great to meet you, Ryan.
Yeah, likewise. Nice meeting you both, and thanks for having me on.
So that was an interesting interview.
Yes, it was.
You don't think about all the crap they have to look at.
You know, it was something that I had thought about from time to time, but I hadn't been in a while. And just like I had brought up in that conversation there with Ryan, it was probably the first time I actually thought about it was when I was reading about all of the things that Facebook content moderators were going through, and that people were starting to report that those who were there to try to stop disinformation were being sucked in by the disinformation, which to me is really like finally saw the light on something.
Yeah.
That there is a secret hand, you know, an invisible hand that runs things beyond what we all see on this very superficial level of government and media and all of that. And there's corporate interests that overlap, and there's really no difference between or a big difference between the major parties and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, outside of that, it's you tend to not think about the violence and the abuse and all that other crap that's all over the place. It's disturbing.
Yeah, it sure is. I'm glad we got to talk to him. I've been looking forward to that one. And just before we close out the show today, next Friday it will be just the two of us, Frank. But Monday we have Lee Smith joining us on the podcast.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, and Wednesday we have Ned Ryan.
Wow, this is a double whammy.
Yeah, we got a double whammy week. And then today tomorrow I'm interviewing Ekim Alptekin from the Farah issue for the radio show, just because it's going to be super in depth, and I want to make sure that it's a full hour to understand that story, and I'm excited for that one. So we'll talk about it on the podcast. I hope you listen.
Yes, I know. I'll be listening.
Okay, cool. So you have been listening today to the Dark to Light podcast with
Rainy Stormy Val and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you. We will see you on Friday.
Later.
This is A Place for My Head Quick Picks on Radio Influence.
This week on the A Place for My Head podcast, we are joined by Sean Lopez. He's one of the co-hosts of the podcast As You Were, which is a podcast based primarily around military veterans and transitioning to civilian life and things like that. Sean is a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps. He's also a Purple Heart recipient. He did some combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he opens up and he talks a lot about being in combat face to face with the Taliban, being exposed to, you know, multiple explosions, IEDs, and so much more. He, most importantly, though, he talks about the mental health aspect of being in the military, both while you're in there and post-military life. So, you know, this is one for the books. This is unlike any other podcast we've had, and it's certainly one you need to check out. So this week on the A Place for My Head podcast, it's Sean Lopez. Check it out anywhere podcasts are found.
A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and Jerry P. Tuck can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.